on the Social Hour, we are interviewing Kristen Slow of new lifestyle app Monogram. Plus, how social shines against Superstorm Sandy and Facebook's new timeline look. Maybe. All that and free Wi-Fi with a price on the Social Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 84, recorded Friday, November 2nd, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media in a systematic way with Social Media Solutions from SAP. Learn more at sap.com/twit. And by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio, plus more than 50 new features, including mobile-responsive designs. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR11. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And Sarah, how are you doing this week?
Amber, I'm great. I am getting ready to have a very relaxing evening after a pretty long week. And I'm looking forward to it. And then tomorrow I'm going to go sailing on the San Francisco Bay on my friend's new sailboat, which is pretty fancy.
So that sounds really like a great weekend.
Yeah. How about you?
Very fun. I am doing well. I spent the morning doing a bunch of hits for the new iPad mini, so that kept me very busy. And I feel as though it's also been a very busy week. Lots has happened, and of course, lots of tragedy in terms of Sandy. We're going to talk about that later, but
yes,
also
are.
Excited for our first guest, Alexis Ohanian, who's been on the show before, actually recommended Kristen to come on to talk about her new service, the iPad app Monogram.
Yeah, so Kristen Slow, let's go ahead and introduce you now. You've been patiently waiting. Co-founder Hi. And chief creative officer at Monogram. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be on the show.
So Amber, have you had a chance to play around with Monogram yet? I've got it up running on my iPad now, and I am not a huge shopper, but I am a huge window shopper, so I like it already.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I love things that are visually beautiful, and I think that's something that this does really well, is it's so visual, so rich with imagery, and even though, like you mentioned, I don't do a ton of shopping, but I love the inspiration that something like this gives us. So I guess just to throw it back to Kristen, you just launched this week. So exciting. How did you come up with the idea for Monogram, and what is it all about?
Thank you. So we're super excited, too. We were having a mini celebration last night. So the idea for Monogram comes from your magazine. When you look at it now and you go through and you browse, you can't actually shop anything. So it's almost frustrating. And there's all this great content out there and all the, you know, these bloggers who, you know, curate looks and put everything together. And what we wanted to do is marry those two. So what we wanted to do is create a shoppable magazine. And there's no better place than that on the tablet. So we started iPad first to avoid, you know, all the other noise. And this way you can go through, you can browse, you can look through collections. We have blogger content and we're really gearing up more of that. So you can kind of work with it and really feel like you're shopping in a magazine.
Now this is actually Monogram. If I go ahead and click on the settings area here, I have the opportunity to save logins at a variety of stores that I'm familiar with, Neiman Marcus, Nordstrom, Bloomingdale's, or even Gilt that I might have accounts with already. Is that actually how Monogram works, where you are just directing us
yes.
to the eventual destination so that we just don't have to search through five stores or, in this case, five different apps?
Yeah, so we save your login information. And right now when you actually go and buy something, it'll bring you in the app to the direct retailer and you buy through them.
Now, there was also an element to the service that is all around the idea of recommendations and curated content. And that really lends itself to our show, which is all about the social media experience. Can you talk a little bit about that curation and how that all happens?
Sure, sure. So what we're really looking at is sort of the social commerce aspect of it. So when you go through and you're browsing and you're buying, in the back end, we see those recommendations, we see those purchases, and we can tell people like, you know, yourself bought this dress, they bought their shoes. So instead of looking at your friend network, where not everyone will have the same taste as you, we can look at people who actually do have the same taste as you and give you recommendations and things that you might like and, you know, other options. And then in it, you can sort of create this little wardrobe and save things. And then you can tweet that out. You can share it with your friends if you wish. But we really want to look at it as individual curation and how you can draw from that. In that vein, we're also working with bloggers for cross promotion. So there's such great content out there that we want to bring it in and sort of look through it and filter it with our curating eye and bring that back out to the general public.
Now, I noticed when I first logged into Monogram, I had the option to sign in through Facebook. That was my only option. Was that a conscious decision? Is it just simplify things? Again, the app is new, and this is the way that people can access Monogram off of the bat. But I know we talk about Facebook quite a bit on the Social Hour, and not everybody loves Facebook.
Sure. So we did it Facebook first. That way, you know, we understand the person's real. We can sort of get a sense of them. Are you male or are you female? So when you open up the app, it already brings you to who you are. So you can shop male or female if you are, you know, of the other sort, but you can go through and already have that information for you. And with that, you can Facebook out our collections. You can tweet out our collections. So we started Facebook first to sort of get into that space.
Now, there's a lot of competition right now in the social commerce space. A lot of companies trying to figure out how to do this, how to be able to capture those audiences, get people in, get them shopping and providing recommendations, whether it's from Pinterest or other sites. So can you talk a little bit about the competition in that area and how you see you having an edge on some of the other people who are doing similar things?
Sure. So the way we're really looking at it is that there's such great content out there and great marketing. What we want to do is take the best of the best. So with our stylists, with our bloggers, and really curate it down for our users. Instead of just putting a lot of information out there, we want it to be gorgeous. We want it to be like your favorite magazines and really have this, you know, creative, curated look. Instead of just having everything in one place, we want to really filter it through our Monogram eye.
Very I love cool. this. I'm sorry, my internet at work is so slow. I'm having a hard time loading Monogram, of course, now that we're live, but it was loading fine earlier. It's certainly, it's on our end, not yours. I really love this. Like I said, Kristen, I do a lot of window shopping, especially via my iPad, because it's just great for browsing. You mentioned noise, you know, cut through the noise of so many different shopping services. Obviously, what Monogram does is great because it's trying to cut down on the amount of time that I spend looking for that perfect thing. But if I know about Gill already, if I maybe go to Nordstrom on a regular basis, maybe I've got a Threadflip account, all of a sudden, you know, I go to Fab and, you know, I'm looking for gifts there. All of a sudden, it's like, how do I make room for yet another service?
Sure. So what we do is we digest that down. So we bring every place you love. You know, you mentioned Gill, you mentioned Nordstrom. What we do is we bring that all into one place and we do variations on a theme. So where you open a magazine and there's an editorial spread, you know, on beautiful color and glamour and all that, we bring that down into the app. You can actually buy the items. If there's, you know, a specific sneaker or shoe and you want to see it paired two ways, like in some of your best shopping magazines, we do that. We bring that down and we have, you know, goods from the flash sales, from the department stores, and you can bring it down and you can sort of see that. So it keeps the serendipity, you know, shopping in a mall, you're excited, you see something new, you're in a magazine, you see something new. We still keep that together, but again, it's just edited down.
Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, because I know we talk about lots of different apps on the show, I also end up reviewing a ton of different apps. And one thing I notice is that when they launch, obviously there's lots of buzz. I know you've been covered in TechCrunch and other places and a lot of excitement around it, and it is absolutely beautiful. But what are your plans to be able to sustain that? I know you've received some funding, which is great, but what are your plans long term to make sure that the app continues to be relevant as times are changing so quickly and users are so fickle about what they use next?
Sure, sure. So we're sort of going in two veins. So as we speak right now, our, you know, back-end programmers are working with new affiliates to get them up and running on the site. So we want to, you know, offer more product that we edit down through our lens And then at the same time, we're going to be featuring new enhancements coming out in a few weeks, new ways to have shoppers see what's coming up, really keep it sort of in that vein. And then again, you know, working with social media. So working with bloggers, working with great content providers, keeping it fresh, cross promotion. And then again, you know, being able to Facebook and tweet things out and reach a greater audience.
You mentioned Facebook and Twitter, and we talk about this on the show a lot. Is those are the two social networks pretty much any new service has to integrate with at some point, or off the bat, or else it's like, what? You're not even trying. But what are some other social networks that Monogram is considering, if any, at least in your early stages?
Sure. So we're looking, you know, to pin things out, to get, you know, Pinterest audience where everything's so visually appealing with our collections, with our affiliates, with our goods. Again, it's just even more visually appealing. So we want to be able to curate that space. And then working with bloggers where there's all these beautiful photos and these beautiful, you know, style images and being able to get in on that space. But again, through our lens. So it's, you know, it's Facebook, it's Twitter, it's Pinterest. And then it's working with content providers in the media space of bloggers.
Just one more question from me in terms of advice for other people out there. I know there are people who are listening or watching this show who are entrepreneurs. They're starting new companies. Maybe it's a mobile company that's providing an application. What advice do you have for companies who are starting up in this environment, in this economy, and trying to get noticed, trying to get funding, and just really trying to get their name out there?
Sure. I think you need to understand your space and be passionate about it. My whole life is based on, you know, merchandising and retail and product, and that's where my passion lies. And I think if you have the passion and you see something that you want to change, that's where you'll get the most excitement, and investors and users and everyone will feel that in your passion.
Very cool.
Yeah, I absolutely love this. Monogram at getmonogram.com is the site, although it's just a link to download the app. And can Android people expect an app soon? What's next?
So, you know, what's next is just continue to grow, continue to seek new avenues. So at some point, yes.
Very cool. Thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you on the show. Congratulations again on the launch. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of people excited to give this a try.
Thank you.
It's Kristen Slow, co-founder and chief creative officer at Monogram. It is a lovely new iPad app. I have had quite a bit of fun playing with it over the last couple hours, and it's brand new, too. Thanks again, Kristen. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Thanks, Sarah. Bye, Amber.
Bye.
Quick reminder to everyone that might not be watching us live. We do record the show live on Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. It's a lot of fun. You can chat with us in our chat room, actually. You can tweet at us. You can send us emails. Actually, you know, we're not really checking the email box when we're live, so maybe Twitter and chat is the best place to give us real-time feedback. But it's a lot of fun. But don't worry, if you can't join us live, you can always go to twit.tv/TSH. That is our show mothership. That's where everything lives. Information about the guests we talk to, about their amazing services that they're building, websites that we mention, and so on. It's all there, along with links to videos, subscription links, all the good stuff. And of course, if you do want to email us, we read your email all week, just usually not right on this in this hour, at thesocialhour@twit.tv. Okay, Amber, what do you think? Should we thank one of our wonderful sponsors for this episode of The Social Hour before we get into some of our news of the week?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. We have lots of great news, lots of interesting things going on in the social space, but yeah. Good idea to get on with the ad.
Oh, cool. Good. I'm glad, because this is Social Media Solutions from SAP, which is like, it is the match made in heaven for our show. It's perfect, because all of the conversations about brands are happening on social media. If Kristen, our guest, wanted to, you know, kind of get the initial word about Monogram, where's she going to go? She wants to monitor what people are saying, how they're sharing news of her company and what they think about it with each other on Twitter, on Facebook, on blogs, in comments. All of that stuff is really, really relevant so that the company knows how to take that information and make a product better and keep the consumers happy. If you work in social media for a large enterprise, it can become pretty difficult to stay on top of the conversation, because if you're a big company, you got a lot of folks talking about you and you want to monitor it, but it's a big beast. Social Media Solutions from SAP helps large enterprises get back on top of this, listening, engaging with people via social media in smart ways. there's two components that are really cool. There's the listening component. Of course, you got to know what people are saying. You want to be listening. It's like you just want to sit there and take it all in. But that's a lot of noise, right? Social Media Solutions captures and reports on these conversations so you get them. They make sense to you. Surfaces the feelings people have. You know, there's a lot of emotion that goes into a comment. You know, it could be flippant, but it's important to kind of get the tone of how people are, you know, surfacing sentiment. And that helps you build better products because then you can incorporate what you've learned with real-time customer feedback back into your product, back into your efforts. You can identify customers who are ready to buy something. They got buying signals. Those signals are there, but sometimes it can be a little hard to read. So that's what Social Media Solutions does well. Uses natural language processing, which is a really smart way to know the differences between a statement, you know, that's got a little twinge of anger, maybe, or a statement that's a little bit happier, that kind of stuff. It all matters. Then, of course, you want to engage with your people, with your folks, with your community. That's the engaging component SAP has put together. You can improve customer feedback because if you've got 12 people on a team, that's a pretty big social media team. But hey, let's say you're at a big enterprise. Everybody does something different. So you don't all want to be getting this feedback and trying to figure out who's going to answer what. It'd be really nice if certain feedback just goes to the appropriate person automatically. So that's great. Somebody tweets a technical support problem and you're not on tech support, you probably shouldn't get that. You don't need to be the middleman. It should be easier to funnel questions to the right people so that they can get back to customers. Keep everybody happy. Social Media Solutions from SAP is accurate, real-time understanding of your brand's performance. You know, how you doing out there? It's important to know that stuff. If you want to learn more, go to sap.com/twit. And if you manage social media for large regional or national enterprises, it's really, really worth your while to go over to sap.com/twit and see how they can improve your job. And make you a better employee, too. Thanks so much to SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. So, Amber, I was all excited. A couple days ago, I read an article on TechCrunch that Pandora had a new iOS and Android app that was allowing it to get what they called the Facebook treatment, which means, okay, if I start listening to my dubstep Pandora station, and yes, I do have one, that will start showing up in my timeline as long as I give Pandora access to be publishing via Facebook, which is great. I do that on RDO already. And every so often, somebody who is friends with me will say, hey, I really liked that song. Thanks for sharing. And I kind of go, I forgot I was sharing. So I feel like it's music is kind of a fun thing to be sharing via Facebook. But I don't know. I maybe I'm crazy. I'm opening up my Facebook or my Pandora app here, and it would seem like I would have a good way in the settings to share with Facebook. I guess I got to do that on the Facebook side to grant Pandora publishing access. I don't know. It just seems like something I should be able to do while I'm in the app. That's so that I don't have to go back
strange.
And forth. A little bit.
Huh. Yeah, I have not tested this out. As you may know, Pandora is only available in certain countries. Canada is not one of them because of many licensing issues with the artists. So I think we had access, I think, a couple of years ago, but then it was kind of taken away. So absolutely love the service, though. I think Tim Westergan, the founder, was on the earlier version of The Social Hour a few different times. And obviously, they've been so successful. I don't understand that either, why you wouldn't be able to control that from within the service. It just seems like a weird thing to force you to go out to Facebook to do that. I mean, is there any logical reason for that? Can you think of anything?
I don't know. But I also had a really weird glitch that was totally unrelated where my mom's Pandora account somehow merged with mine. It's like,
oh boy.
I have no idea how that happened. I have now deleted her stations because they were really weird. It was like, I don't know, Baroque classical music or something. That's how I knew it was my mom. I said, is this your station? Who else would this be? How did you get into my Pandora account? It's very weird. But I don't know. Maybe something crazy is going on with my iOS app because I definitely updated it. Hmm. But, you know, it could be a glitch just for me. If anybody has had the same issues, let us know. But in general, Pandora is facing more competition from streaming services than ever. Spotify is huge on Facebook. I mean, Spotify is like the golden child when you think of third-party apps that have done really well on Facebook and been able to leverage the huge network there to kind of get the word out about the service. And if Pandora is as visible as some of the other music services are, then, yeah, I think it'll encourage more and more people to use it.
Mm-hmm, definitely. You know, the thing that surprised me the most about the article is not so much the features, but the TechCrunch article. I was amazed to see that as far as Pandora's primary revenue driver, this is attributed to mobile and other device revenues, worked out to about $100 million in 2012, putting it second to Google in terms of mobile ads. Now, we've talked about mobile ads on the show before. You know, some people saying, oh, they don't work and it really can't be that successful. They can be very intrusive. But obviously, within Pandora, they have done a great job of integration and people don't seem to mind them. But amazing, $100 million in 2012. That number for some reason surprises me. I don't know about you, Sarah.
It sounds really high. Yeah, I kind of have this, you know, so this is the way that I feel about Pandora ads is I don't really, even though I really appreciate the fact that they've got an iPad app, once I'm listening to a station, I'm not looking at it. I don't see the ads. An audio ad every once in a while does come up because I don't pay for the premium version of Pandora, which would strip out ads altogether, and it doesn't ruin my life. I'm okay with it because it's not very intrusive. It only happens every once in a while, and they're pretty short. But I wonder, how are the ads so effective when it's so easy for me to either not see them if they're visual or tune them out because I'm used to ignoring commercials? I mean, you could say the same thing about any of the shows on Twit, I guess. Sometimes I just wonder, it's like, how does this all work so well when I don't remember, any of the ads that I heard on Pandora on the last day?
But I think, I mean, one of the things I always find with ads that are done like they're done on the Twit network is there's something about the way that they're integrated. So it's more seamless and it seems like they're very relevant to the content that we're talking about. So they can be useful to anyone who's listening or anyone who's watching. And that's the one thing I agree with you for some of the mobile ads or some things that I see in banners, whether it's, or Facebook ads, whatever it might be. It just has a different feeling to it. But obviously it's working. People are it looks as though they are, gaining new users or, some type of clientele from the ads that they're putting out there. But it's just not us, Sarah.
No, I guess not. And then, of course, there's the rumor that Apple is going to launch its own Pandora-like competitor sometime next year. No confirmation from Apple, the company itself, of course. But this is just one more way for Pandora to stay relevant, even in the midst of many competitors and wannabes. Pandora, I've been using Pandora for so long. It sort of seems like it's untouchable in a certain way. But then again, there really isn't another service like it. There are other services that, I pay $10 a month for a streaming service where I can buy music, but then I've got Pandora, which is a whole different thing. So yeah, I'm glad that they have better integration with Facebook and they are continuing to innovate. They're certainly for me, iOS, but also for you, Amber, because I know you have an Android phone, Android devices as well. Keeping up with the times.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Now, Sarah, obviously this week, very sad week for people, especially people in the eastern part of the United States with Hurricane Sandy and all the damage that it did. I think most recently the number that I saw was more than 80 people had been killed because of Sandy in various parts of New York and other states. Even one person in Toronto, unfortunately, was killed this week because of a falling sign due to wind. So just an absolutely tragic week. I'm sure like many of us, Sarah, you were tuned into all that was happening in social media. I would watch the news live, but I felt as though I got more information out of some of the social media sites and the imagery and everything, just heartbreaking and such an outpouring of content through different social channels.
Yes, me too. The night that the storm hit, was approaching landfall and people were really freaked out. I mean, obviously anyone who was in the eye of the storm legitimately had to get disaster kits ready and make sure that there was water and the whole thing. I, watching from really far away, I was glued to Twitter. I mean, absolutely, I didn't even turn on the television. It was almost like I knew that I would see and hear a lot of repetition and a lot of, well, we're getting developing stories and a lot of, anchors filling time because there's a lot of unknown. And I knew that that was just going to stress me out more. And so I updated Twitter every 2 seconds. And that was chaotic because, of course, you get a lot of stuff coming in real time. So even though I'm getting real time information, some of it doesn't have enough context. Some of it is not accurate or has to be updated at a later time. And so, you know, there's so many things getting retweeted that people that I know and trust are retweeting people that I don't know. So I don't know if I trust them yet. So it was a lot to take in. But at the same time, it made the immediacy of the tools that we have online and the social tools more important maybe than anything I can think of another event.
I totally agree. You know, interesting, if we look at some of the articles and some of the stats that you dug up about the social media reaction, one stat in particular, as far as Instagram, a lot of people posting photos on Instagram. This article as of October 29th at 5:48 p.m. saying that Instagram users are posting 10 Hurricane Sandy pictures every second. I mean, that's a phenomenal amount of content at that time. That meant more than 244,000 photos that were tagged with Sandy as a hashtag or Frankenstorm or whatever it might be. And like I said, the imagery just absolutely heartbreaking. But I think it's one of the ways that people were able to learn about Sandy. What was happening is all of the storytelling from individuals who at that time really were like citizen journalists. They were on the ground and things were happening. And they were able to report quickly.
Exactly. It's so true. And you think of Instagram has what? I think at last count it was something like 20 million users, or it's a very big number. I'm probably even being too conservative. But of those users, most of them aren't just in New York ready to take pictures. I mean, this is not a huge number of people who are contributing a huge number of photos because they're there. And again, yeah, a news organization isn't going to be in my apartment if I'm in New York and I look down and the street's flooded below. It's like they're not going to get this vantage point. So you get all of this information from people that is it's raw and really helpful and does help tell the story.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously, Twitter being probably the primary source, I think, for a lot of people who were using social media channels to stay in touch. I mean, I like you, kept refreshing, you know, every couple of seconds to get new information in terms of what was happening. Twitter had a great page that they had put up, resources on Twitter for Hurricane Sandy, and a bunch of different accounts that you could follow to get up-to-date information for different states, about half a dozen accounts per state that would be useful. And of course, accounts like FEMA and other sites that you could follow. So, again, I mean, I don't think we can undervalue how important these platforms were, like you mentioned, just to get that information out there for the people who, you know, obviously not everybody had internet access, but people hopefully still had cell phone access, and at least some people, and were able to share some of the information that was out there.
You know, Amber, being in Toronto, I'm sure that you were watching this all with, you know, a mixture of sort of horror and worry that the storm was going to head northwest. And be a factor in your neck of the woods. Was there any issue for you?
Yeah, you know, we did get the tail end of the storm, and I think this is the most frightening part of it, is that obviously we are very far away from New York City and New Jersey. However, we were hit the first night by the storm. It was the first time ever that I could actually feel my entire house shaking. There were about four different shakes just because of the intensity of the wind. And literally between 12 and 3 a.m. in the morning, I really didn't sleep that well because I could just feel everything just shake. And, you know, it's a terrible sound. It reminded me of living in San Francisco, like an earthquake, just that sort of little swaying back and forth. And like I said off the top, one woman was killed when she was walking because of high winds and a sign had fallen on top of her. So we did not get it to any degree that people in the Eastern Seaboard got the storm. But still, just to think about how far we are away, and the fact that the storm was so massive that we still got hit. I mean, it just so frightening for people who were really in the eye of Sandy and during that time.
Absolutely. More than 20 million tweets were sent during the peak of Superstorm Sandy. These are some numbers that Twitter released today. They probably needed a little bit of time to get a little bit of that data under control so that they could share it with the rest of us. But you know, these numbers, I never know what to make of them anymore. I go 20 million tweets. I mean, it seemed like there were a lot of tweets going out. I don't know if that's crazy high. It seems about right. You know, if they would have said 50 million, I would have said, okay, that sounds good too. But it certainly was, it was intense. And not just here, I am somewhere on the East Coast, I've got something to share via Twitter, but the rest of us, you know, just tweeting things like, I can't reach my friend who lives in Manhattan, or I feel very helpless, or does anyone know the answer to this specific question that's storm related? So there's just a lot of activity that happens mm-hmm. in these moments. And of course, Sandy was a great opportunity for people to share while they still had power. I mean, we've got mm-hmm. a lot of people who don't have power, at least at the time that we're recording this, not expected to until I think sometime late tonight at the earliest. And that's just New York City, and that's just some people. So yeah. I guess before you, you're not able to charge your devices, it's nice to know that people were flocking to Twitter, and there was some misinformation out there, but mm-hmm. for the most part, it seemed like it was really a tool for good.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're seeing misinformation everywhere, though, not just on social media sites. At one point on CNN, they had mentioned some stats that weren't true about flooding in New York City, and they had to kind of retract the statement half an hour later. And anything like this, it's a disaster, and there is such chaos, you know, it's mm-hmm. hard to get that information out there and make it accurate. So, and obviously the story continues till today. So we'll keep an eye on that, but lots of coverage. And of course, our hearts go out to people who have been hurt in the storm or lost their homes. It's just so sad.
Very true. Absolutely. So, well, let's move on to a little lighter news, cosmetic news as it relates to Facebook. Inside Facebook is reporting that the social network giant is testing a timeline layout with a single column of posts rather than the sort of crazy timeline that we're used to these days. I'll go ahead and just open up my own account. So, you know, we all know that we're talking about the same thing. Jason, I don't know if you can get my computer. Oh, there you go. So yeah, this is my timeline. I've got sort of my left-hand column. I've got my right-hand column. They're somewhat staggered, which makes for a very visually interesting timeline, but also sort of a cluttered one. And then sometimes you get these little pockets where, depending on your network connection, what's supposed to be in one of the little timeline boxes takes a minute to get in there and appropriately. So sometimes I feel like, yeah, it's interesting, that's for sure, but it sure is noisy, and I don't know how beautiful it is either. Amber, I know that you are a stickler for good design. What do you think about the current Facebook timeline? Is it too much?
I hate it. I hate the two columns. They drive me absolutely crazy. I even though I'm familiar with it and have been using it for a certain amount of time, I just think from a user's perspective, it's a little bit clumsy. So I like the idea of a single column. It seems like that's what they're proposing, and it would make more sense. So you would just read down like you would with any other site. I can't think of any other service that splits something that is important as a timeline into different columns that are beside each other. So you can't really look in chronological order unless you're going kind of up, down, back and forth. I don't know which way.
Didn't timeline used to be one column, and then you just had a bunch of junk
anymore
on either side, but the actual meat of it was just one column? I think it was, because...
Was it?
Well, and it wasn't called timeline. I mean, this whole two-column thing happened when Facebook said, okay, this is going to be a chronology of your life, starting with when you were born, and that's why we want you to give us information about what your birthday is, and then you can go through either your own timeline or your friends' timelines by year, by month, that sort of thing. And I think, if I remember correctly, the two-column view was a way to kind of push more stuff up into above the fold, I guess. Because if you've got a really busy February, how much are people really going to be scrolling down all the way? But if you've got two columns and there's less scrolling, I think that's what the thinking was initially. But it really has gotten messy, and I don't have that many third-party apps that I allow to publish for me on Facebook. Mm. I've got Foursquare, I've got Instagram, RDO, things that I like, you know, pages that I like, okay, that's fine. Sometimes when I get tagged, at the AT&T ballpark with a friend, that sort of thing. But it's not like I have so many services that I'm posting to Facebook that it's just a mess. I mean, this is all pretty relevant to me. But it is a mess. I mean, it's kind of And it's even weirder when you go to somebody else's timeline, because it's like, whatever they're using is all of a sudden very colorful, and there's so many boxes everywhere. So
I know.
I welcome it too. I think we could use a little simplification in our lives when it comes to Facebook.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think it needs to be more simple, and I think it is a little mess. I mean, messy. I think even when I look at the timeline, there are other things that I'm not a huge fan of, even with the big blocks, you know, where you have your photos and your likes. Like, the fact that things that I like have so much prominence on the page, I'm not a huge fan of that, but I guess I can get rid of that. I just get lazy sometimes, but I think they could simplify it. It's getting a little MySpace 1.0, if I could say that.
Yeah, getting a little out of control. You know, Amber, this is... just a really weird mention, because I've never seen anything like this before since we're on the subject of Facebook, but I got the weirdest notification the other day. And the notification, I took a little screenshot of it, and the notification was, call my friend Shreya and give her a code because she is trying to get into her Facebook account, and if it's really her, then I should call her, give her this code, so that she can regain access. It was, you know, this is sort of like a security mechanism if she just, for whatever reason, like, forgets her password, or is just, you know, having a senior moment, or I don't know, for whatever reason, she's having a hard time accessing her Facebook account. It could also be somebody impersonating her to gain access to her Facebook account. So Facebook says to me, for her security, you know, so let's say this isn't her, call her on her phone. You know, the phone number's not listed here anywhere. Don't send the code by email or SMS. Call her and tell her this. And I mean, I stared at this for like 5 minutes. Like, is this a phishing scheme? I do not understand what I'm looking at right now. And I think it wasn't, but it was very strange. I don't know. I've never seen this before.
Huh. I've never seen that either. I'm just not that familiar with that. That's kind of interesting. But I could see that throwing some people off. You know, I just don't know if it looks that legitimate.
Yeah. Weird, huh?
Very weird.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's if anyone's gotten that before, let me know, because I couldn't make any sense of it. I just stayed out of it, actually. I was like, I don't want to call anybody about this.
Yeah.
which is probably not the idea, but there you go.
Interesting. All right. So, Sarah, next up, we have our social tip of the week. And I think this is pretty fitting, considering we've already talked a little bit about Hurricane Sandy. And recently, Facebook has announced that you're able to give Facebook gifts that are charitable gifts. So I think this is a really cool idea. Right now, it's limited to a $25 donation that you can give to someone sort of in their name. And I think it's a great concept. It doesn't look like it's rolled out to everybody yet, but basically here's how it works. So if you do have gifts enabled within your Facebook account, you could potentially give $25 to the American Red Cross, for example, to help people who are impacted by Hurricane Sandy. And you could give that gift in the name of a friend of yours who would be notified. So instead of giving, you know, gifts and useless things that people don't need, you can actually do some charitable good. So I like this and can't imagine it being more timely than this week.
I agree. I absolutely agree. In fact, I did that today because it is my sweetheart's birthday today. And I thought, oh, Facebook gift, I'll do that. You know, it's so hip. We're so modern. And as I'm looking through some of the gifts, you know, some of it I was like, oh, he'd like this or he'd like that. But then Give a Donation was right up there. And I thought, wait, that makes so much more sense because it makes everybody feel good. He doesn't need anything, really.
Exactly.
I mean, I know Facebook wants us to think that we should all be giving each other a lot of physical gifts, but it's really nice to have that as an option because a lot of people, to have something donated in your name is just as meaningful as getting a little present and a lot more, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So very cool feature. I mean, sometimes I know we've been, or at least I have been down on Facebook for certain features that they've announced that it really aren't that compelling. But I think this is one that is a move in the positive direction. So it's a good thing. For our spotlight this week, Sarah, I wanted to just focus on Gmail and their new compose window that they recently launched. If you're a Gmail user, you probably saw it when you were in your inbox and you can see all of a sudden you have a little window on the right hand side where you're able to instantly send an email. Kind of looks like chat at first when you see it, and it allows you to multitask better, be able to send emails better, not as much information, so you basically can fire off an email to someone in just a couple of seconds. It's a simple thing, but I think it's an improvement.
Yeah, it's good. You know, it's so strange. I I have not gotten the rollout on my laptop, but on my iMac at home I did. And it was so funny. Jason and I, it was one of the days where I was working from home and we're doing TNT and I'm via Skype. And as we're talking, I'm sort of ranting and raving about how the Gmail window looks so awful. And just, why would they do this? No, that can't be right. That can't be the actual style. And he's kind of going, I don't know. I think it's pretty nice. I don't know why you don't like it. And it turns out that I was accessing it via some version of Safari that did not play nicely at all. In fact, I'll pull up what it looked like because you'll all laugh and say, well, no wonder you were so upset. This is what it looked like. It's like, that would suck, wouldn't it?
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay.
That's what I was freaking out about the other day, Jason.
I don't know. I kind of like it. Yeah, I don't know why you don't.
You can see the other emails underneath and nothing's even aligned correctly. That's insane. That's absurd. And he's like, it doesn't look that bad. So
it's, yeah, that's not pretty.
Something was rendering inappropriately, for sure. At first I said, I can't believe that Google wouldn't have tested this in Safari. That's crazy. People have said, it looks fine in Safari. It's just you. It's not everybody. Something's wrong with your machine. Story of my life. But yeah, the new Compose window, if you don't like the sort of, it's in the lower right-hand corner, you can pop it out. But I like it. I think it looks pretty nice.
Oh, yeah. I think it looks really slick. And in fact, sir, I will say in the past week, I feel as though I've really decreased my email load because I've been using unroll.me. We mentioned it last week. I can't remember if it was a pick of mine or if a viewer had sent it in, but just to get rid of emails, unsubscribed emails. And then even with the new Compose feature, I feel as though I can answer emails more quickly. So that's always a good thing when we can tackle our inboxes in more practical ways.
Agreed. I absolutely, absolutely agree with you. You know, while we're on the subject of stuff that we had talked about on previous shows, remember the Taploid, which was a tabloid version yes. of your Facebook newsfeed? And you and I had both signed up for it, but then there was a lag and we were on some sort of a waiting list. And so we were like, I guess we could just revisit this. I got my first Taploid. And I thought it might be kind of fun to just briefly look at it. This is issue number 3, published Friday, the 26th of October. So, okay, so this was last week. This is a friend of mine from high school. I don't even know what that means. I guess it's some sort of Halloween theme. Then I've got friends of mine who are, I guess, maybe checking in around the world quite a bit. So Taploid is sort of making the story that they're a bunch of traveling nomads and they can't be stopped, okay? And then I've got Micah Baldwin, who is a really good pet owner. Although it says, how does Micah Baldwin lead the dog pet in taking care of her pooch? Micah's a boy. Micah's a man. So something dog-related there. And then this is our old boss at Tech TV. Paul Block, the long-lost Romney child, which is hysterical because he's maybe the most liberal Obama supporter that I know. So if I just even showed him this, he'd be upset for the rest of the day. So that's just weird. And so on. So it was actually kind of good for a laugh. I've already looked through this, so we don't have to see all of it now. I'm not actually reading it for the first time, but it was actually more entertaining than I thought it would be. It was not mean-spirited. Yes. In the way that I was worried that this whole tabloid thing would be. I don't think I need this once a week, but it's kind of fun.
Yeah, no, it looks like fun. I mean, it took so long for it to actually materialize. I think that was the unfortunate part of the process, but I guess it takes some time and energy to put all of that together.
Well, it's like the tabloids that you read, you know, at the nail salon or the gym, right? It's like you're kind of reading it and you look and you're like, March 2012, geez. Yeah. No wonder it all seems so outdated.
Oh, yeah. No, idea. I totally agree. Too funny. All right, sir. We got a couple of great comments as far as our feedback for the show. The first one looks like it was an email. It's a Facebook-related question. The email is, I'd like to get your input on for bloggers and digital tastemakers whom have established a personal brand for themselves. What do you think is the better option for them to choose from? A Facebook brand page for people to like and engage with separately, or their personal Facebook page, which people can subscribe to you to view, like, comment, share public posts. I work as a social media manager and have had plenty of discussions about this with others in the social media management community. This seems to be a topic where everyone seems to be divided. He also says that, or he or she says, I recently spotted this license plate here in Toronto, which I thought of both of you and Leo and would get a good laugh of. I haven't seen that picture, but
I meant to send it to you before the show, but I've got it up on my computer now. It's a twit person. I think it's probably just a coincidence. You twit.
Oh, hilarious.
Isn't that great?
Nice. That's awesome.
I twit, you twit. And it's in Toronto of all places. So it's like we're all connected.
We are all connected.
Yeah, the twit license plate has nothing to do with the question, but it is kind of fun.
It is kind of fun. And we love getting photos, so that's always good.
Yes, thank you.
I'll take a quick stab at the answer, and I feel as though I don't really have a good answer for this because I think it kind of depends. I did have a personal page, I had a page on Facebook for a while that people could like. I just felt it was a little bit cumbersome to be able to manage a personal account and a page. And because I use Facebook really just for professional reasons and some personal stuff, but I don't share a lot of really personal information there, it was more fitting for me as far as my personal brand just to have facebook.com/AmberMack, and that would be a personal account that people could subscribe to, because then I could have unlimited subscribers. You know, there has been a cap on the number of friends you can have, but that just made it clean and simple for me. So I just had one place that I had to manage, because the multiple sites on multiple platforms, I just don't have the time and energy to be able to do that. So that's my experience.
It's the same thing with me. I had a Facebook profile, whatever. I don't know. Facebook got big enough for me to be interested and was public and not just for college kids anymore. And I soon thought, oh, yes, well, but I've got professional Sarah also, so I definitely want to make a Sarah Lane page. And I would do my best to try to keep the two separate. So there was, you know, if I had a show that I was proud of or I wanted people to know about, you know, I would do that stuff on my page, and the profile was separate. And then Facebook, it was almost like they made it really hard for me to do both, because they kept introducing compelling reasons for me to then start promoting things and talking about what I was up to professionally on my original profile. I now can have subscribers. I can choose to share a post about this episode of The Social Hour publicly, so I share with anybody who subscribes to me. And then I can post, you know, maybe a family photo just for, you know, my friends list. Well, I have 700 friends, so maybe that goes into, you know, one of my family groups or that sort of thing. So I have so many options with my profile that the page became something that was... it was a hassle to try to figure out, okay, well, what am I going to post to my page that I'm not already sharing anywhere else that makes sense for me to even keep this going? So eventually I just got rid of it. I mean, I don't have a Facebook page anymore, and I feel like, what would I possibly even put on it if I had one now?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So that would be the simple answer. It's not going to work for everyone, especially if you overshare on your Facebook account and you don't select what you want to share with different groups. But I think for the average person, that can be a pretty easy way to be able to manage everything, because otherwise it gets to be a lot of work if you have two different places.
That's true. And I mean, and this also goes for, it was Mo. Mo was the one who emailed us, by the way. Perfect. This goes for, I mean, Mo's question was about a person who had established a personal brand. So if you think of it in terms like that, Amber, I think you and I are, we pretty much got the same advice for everybody. I mean, it's up to you, but if you want to cut down on a lot of unnecessary work, you might want to just consolidate, you know, into a profile, because it does a lot of things that you want. But if you're representing a business or some sort of a brand that's not reflective of just you as a person, then the rules are a little bit different. I follow a variety of Facebook pages that I don't think they could transfer over to profiles. It doesn't work quite the same way. So a little bit of a case-by-case thing. Yeah, I hope so too. All right, we got another email from Tamara G. from Maryland. She says, she's got really, really nice things to say to us, Amber. She said, I wanted to say thanks for the show. It makes me happy to see two lady nerds doing tech stuff. I'm the only lady nerd in my friend group and possibly the only one in my whole school. So thanks for giving me courage. The world is not as bleak as it seems for us tech geeks. Woo!
Very nice.
Absolutely. And then she says, she signs, your French lady nerd, Tamara G. Thank you so much. That's great. I love being a lady nerd. And I don't know if I've ever called myself that before, but I'm certainly going to now.
I agree. It's a great name, Sarah. No, it's good to know. Hopefully it's inspiring for other people. And I know there's lots of ladies who listen. And I think more and more, I mean, it's such a great space to be in right now because there are lots of amazing women in social media and technology starting companies and doing phenomenal things. So good to know. We also have listeners that fall into that category.
Absolutely. And Tamara, you're the only lady nerd in your friend group, or you could think of it as you're the first lady nerd. You are the cool, you're the cool one who knows the fun stuff to think about and do, and you got a cool show that you like too. We're so great. Yeah, I agree. There are a million very interesting, smart, driven, passionate men and women. You know, I throw out the word million because it just sounds like a lot of people, but more than that, who are in our space. So thanks so much for the compliment.
Definitely.
Yeah, we do this show for you guys. All right, Amber, we got a campaign spotlight this week.
Yeah, so we're going to talk more and more about social media marketing campaigns, and sometimes they're good campaigns, sometimes they're bad campaigns. For this week's campaign, we have an email message that was sent out by American Apparel. It was advertising a sale that they were running in wake of the Hurricane Sandy. It was a little bit tasteless, I think I will say. I'll just read what it said. It was a Sandy sale that said, in case you're bored during the storm, they offered 20% off their clothing for shopping. Now, seeing as more than 80 people were killed, more than 100 homes were burnt down, damaged, obviously not a lot of people were bored in those areas, so it does seem a little bit insensitive. And they were not the only ones. You know, there was American Apparel. The Gap also sent out something saying that they would be shopping at Gap.com. I guess the good news with these little campaigns that went out and these comments where people were trying to be, I don't think they were trying to be mean-spirited at all. Of course, they thought, you know, maybe it would be fun and kind of lighten up the mood, but they just weren't sensitive towards the tragedy in terms of what had happened during Hurricane Sandy. And Sarah, we've seen this happen so many times during situations that are very sensitive situations, and companies want to have fun with it and play with it. And the message I think we can all give those companies and those people managing those brands is don't do that. It's just dumb. It never goes well.
I agree. It was somebody I was following on Twitter said in the middle of a barrage of tweets that I was reading, she said, you know, the parody accounts are really funny and clever until somebody dies. It's just best not to get involved. And I thought, you know, that's true. That's the sort of thing where everybody's having a good time, but we're kind of on a brink of tragedy here. So if you just think of the worst case scenario. Do you want to be flippant about making a little bit of a joke about people being stuck inside so that they can, you know, shop online at your store? Probably not, because what if the worst thing happens and then you look like a jerk? I mean, it's like time and time again, nobody seems a lot of people take the advice, but there are always the companies that they say, sort of go like, well, I mean, we didn't know it was going to be this bad. And we certainly, you know, our hearts go out to the victims, you know, of the hurricane. And it's like, but if you had just thought of that beforehand, we could have avoided this and you wouldn't have to apologize.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. Speaking about Hurricane Sandy, I know that our next sponsor has an amazing story about how they kept their servers up and running for all of their customers during Hurricane Sandy. And it involves carrying fuel buckets to the 17th floor of their building. It's an amazing story. So a good time for some chat about Squarespace.
Yeah, Squarespace is our second sponsor. And like Amber said, and we talked about this, by the way, if you haven't watched Tech News Today episode, oh gosh, what was yesterday's episode? I'm not going to be able to find it off the top, Jason. I don't know if you can remember.
But I can't remember.
I'll look it up. We're like, we have so many episodes on that show. But yesterday we talked at length about exactly what the Squarespace team was doing to ensure that people who have Squarespace blogs, their sites weren't going down. I am a Squarespace user.
620, episode 620.
Episode 620. If you haven't already watched or listened, it's a very good episode anyway. But we do talk about what Squarespace did. I mean, we're talking like running up and down, many flights of stairs with buckets and water and making sure that these servers are safe. I mean, it's absolutely astounding. I'm a Squarespace user. I was notified via email several days ago. There might be an issue. Here's the situation. Here's where our servers are. Here's why it looks like we're going to go down. My site is still up. I checked right before the show. I mean, it is quite amazing considering what they had to go through. So kudos to Squarespace. But that aside, since Squarespace is up and it is ready for you, what's so great about it? So many things. The new Squarespace actually is Squarespace latest service. This is a new content management system. So this is for high quality websites, blogs, online portfolios, stuff that looks really, really pro, but doesn't take a professional to build it. If you are a professional, you go ahead and do exactly what you want. But if you're not a professional, and I mean, I have no design skills to speak of at all, and the Squarespace templates, they're at my disposal to make a quality website right away, are amazing. They're absolutely beautiful. Hey, Alex, what is that you're doing over there? Okay, sorry, it's just kind of loud. this is a gallery of that we're looking at. This is a video that you can look at on Squarespace's website that shows that if you have a website, you know, back in the day, you figure, I don't know, someone will have a browser of their choice and they'll look at your website, hopefully a lot. Now people are accessing you on a variety of smartphones and tablets and a million different kinds of computers and laptops. Your site has to look good no matter how anyone reaches you. And that's what Squarespace does. In fact, they make 7 different versions of every single page of your website so that no matter how anyone accesses it, they're not going to get some weirdly rendered page where the photos don't look right or the text is running off the screen. No, no, no. All of this stuff is modern and sleek and looks good. There's, of course, a lot of social media integration. That's what everybody wants to do these days. Amber and I are busy on social media. I want my website to reflect that. I don't want to make it seem like I'm not busy, even though maybe I haven't blogged in a while or I haven't added any photos to my blog. You can import and sync and publish to and from social media. It's really easy. So you can refresh your site content and also let people know, hey, I'm on Twitter, or hey, here's my Pinterest page, all that stuff. You know, that's important. So everything is in sync. You can also auto-publish new blog entries to Twitter, too. So you don't have to think too much about, okay, now I got to blast out the information here and there and everywhere. It's all on the back end, so you don't have to do too much work. Dropbox, LinkedIn, StumbleUpon, Google+, Instagram, Foursquare. Squarespace knows where everybody's hanging out these days, so they make it very easy to integrate. And really good design, too. I mean, the design team at Squarespace is top-notch. They continually impress me. And the new templates with Squarespace 6, the new Squarespace, are really better than ever. They do a really good job of figuring out, okay, well, there are a lot of different websites that someone might want to build. Maybe they're participating in National Novel Writing Month because it's November. So they just really want to write a bunch of words down and make it look really cool. All right, maybe they don't write at all. You know, maybe this is a video podcast group or somebody who's trying to sell photography, you know, all that stuff. And there's so many different reasons that you'd want to put a website together. So that's what Squarespace does, and they're great. If you decide, this is something I'd like to see, sign up for a free account. You don't need a credit card. Just try it out. Start building that site. Use one of the templates, or you could always start from scratch. And if you decide to purchase an account, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR11. You'll get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. Monthly and annual plans are available. You get free domain registration if you register for an annual plan. If you just go ahead and say, I'm going to do this for a year, hey, you get a free domain registration thrown in. That's a good deal. That's squarespace.com/socialhour11 for 10% off that first purchase. And we thank them so much for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour and for going the extra mile this week in New York, where Amazing. Everybody's having a pretty tough time. So you go, Team Squarespace. All right, Amber, it's time for Rad or Fad, and I'm excited.
All right. So Rad or Fad, this is a really, really quick and simple one this week. This is a new feature that Facebook is just testing out. They're testing out a bunch of different things, and this is no exception. This feature would help local businesses provide free Wi-Fi in exchange for people checking in at those business establishments. They are testing this just with a few companies right now. It's a very simple concept. You know, you go, you check in, you get free Wi-Fi. And I have to say, I like this. I think that it makes sense. I think it's kind of rad. I mean, more and more people are depending on free Wi-Fi where they go. And I wouldn't mind checking in. I think I would like a company that offered that. So I don't think it's a stretch to like that company on Facebook and check into it as well.
Yeah, that was my reaction about this story too. We were talking about it earlier here at TWIT, and some of the guys said, well, what about the privacy issues? And I said, well, okay, yes, or security issues, that sort of thing. You know, if you're getting free Wi-Fi via Facebook and it's not a secure connection, is somebody going to sniff out your conversation? And yeah, I mean, that's going to have to be worked out. But that aside, the concept of me checking into Facebook for convenience so that I can get free Wi-Fi is totally worth it to me. I check in everywhere. So again, it's sort of like, well, if you have a Facebook friend that is a little iffy, then yeah, maybe you don't want to be sharing your location all the time on Facebook, but that's also a choice of friends thing. It's not because it's a dangerous feature. And free Wi-Fi is sometimes harder to get than I would like it to be, especially in, you know, a cafe or that sort of thing. So I think this is a great idea, too. And Facebook gets more data from us because we tell Facebook more about what we're doing and when. So everybody gets something out of it.
And the thing is, you don't have to check in, right? You know, I mean, we've talked about this before. I don't use a lot of location-based services. I don't check in all that much. However, this would probably make me check in because I would want free Wi-Fi. So it's a bit of an exchange as far as how much you're willing to give over. But I think it kind of makes sense. It makes sense for businesses that are thinking about investing in this. And I think for individuals who want it. But if you don't want it, you don't have to do it. And you don't get the free Wi-Fi. But I think it's kind of rad and it's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I think it's kind of rad, too. It makes sense for Facebook to give us yet one more reason to be counting on Facebook. Thank you, Facebook. Oh, this is how I check into all sorts of services. This is how I get free Wi-Fi. Hey, other third-party friend. Well, that sounds like third-party app. Hey, friend who doesn't know about this great service. Did you know that all you have to do is check in and you get free Wi-Fi access? I mean, people are going to go nuts over this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, I think it's rad, too. Yeah, I think it seems like a definitely a rad thing. So I'm glad we're in agreement there. Well, Amber, we have stuck to our hour almost to the second.
I know.
It has been
amazing.
One great social hour. This was really fun. Thanks to everybody who hung out with us for the hour. Remember, we are live on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. You can find us all over the web. Amber and I are busy being social butterflies the rest of the week when we're not doing the show. What do you got going on this weekend, Amber?
Sarah, I can't believe you don't remember. Next week we're meeting. I'm just anticipating that moment.
Well, I do remember. I'm trying. Like, what are you doing between now and the day we get to meet?
That is
next Friday.
It is next Friday. This weekend, you know, I've been doing a lot of traveling. I'm about to do some more. And so I think I'm going to stay home and be really boring and just kind of tidy up. I hate a mess in my house, so I need it to be tidy all the time. So I need to do laundry and just kind of get organized. And I think I'm going to be a bit of a homebody this weekend. Not too glamorous, but next weekend I'll be in San Francisco at the Fast Company conference that I'm hosting. And then I'll be at the TWIT studio on Friday.
Isn't that the funnest thing ever? This is so exciting. Amber is actually going to be sitting in this seat, unless she wants the seat. You can have the seat if you want.
No, that's yours.
We could really change it up. We could just do musical chairs, which is going to be probably a tiny bit weird, but in a really, really good way. Because you're usually very far away from me. And so I just imagine you in Ontario, which is just another world connected to me via Skype. But this will be really great. So do try to tune in live because we might, you know, it might all end in tears and be very, very dramatic. So
you never know.
You never know. So you never get on the social hour. All right. Until then, Amber, have a great week. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Until next Friday, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.